Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's March 18th, 1:37, 1:38 in the afternoon, 2009.
Our executive director or one of the...
With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, Senator Huggins, and myself. Senator Stedman, Senator Ellis is out on legislative business, so he will not be joining us today. This afternoon, we're going to have an overview of the governor's FY010 capital appropriation bill, which is Senate Bill 75. We're going to have two departments. We'll stay here till we're done, but we should finish by 3 o'clock. The two agencies will lead off with the Department of Revenue, and then we'll go to the Alaska Finance Corporation. And we will then pick up our work process tomorrow morning. But with that, we'd like to ask a representative from the Department of Revenue to come forward. Laysdale has been here numerous times. And if she can go ahead and walk us through the, I guess, seven appropriations, and then we'll go to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. But the first one is probably the one that catches most people's attention in both dollars and methodologies. So you could please introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the appropriation, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ginger Blaisdell, and I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Revenue. And yes, our first project is a large one, and it is also our top priority for the department. It's approximately $24 million, and it is for a tax management information system. Currently, most of the tax audit and tax collection systems that are managed by the state are done on small legacy programs. Most of them cannot be updated further. And with the onset of PPT and ACEs, we have found that the petroleum revenue tax requirements are just larger than any system that we have, larger than they can handle. So this is a three-phase project. This is the total amount for the project. And the first phase is the petroleum, the oil and gas tax revenues, and corporate income tax. The second phase are some of the other larger tax systems, which would be mining, motor fuel, cruise ship tax would probably be in the second year. And in the third year would be all the rest of the tax systems and making sure the whole thing is working appropriately. And if you have some specific questions, I think Joanna Bales is online.
Maybe you can go into the master line of credit issue, touch on that.
Right. The master lease line of credit is a funding mechanism, and it's a little bit different than the $50 million master lease line of credit that the state has typically run to help better finance some of its operating expenditures. And if I can have Devin Mitchell come forward, he can talk to you about the funding mechanism and how we would propose to finance this system.
Mr. Mitchell, if you can come forward, I see you in the audience. And you've been enthusiastically waiting for your opportunity this year to come to Senate Finance, so
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation. For the record, Devin Mitchell, debt manager for the state of Alaska. So there are a couple of items that the governor's budget contains that they have funded with what they're calling the master lease credit line. And the reality of it is that due to the size of the proposed financings, the other financing is $76 million for a portion of a new statewide accounting system, that we would be selling certificates of participation and not in the sense that we've proposed before this committee in the past, where we're buying buildings, but in this sense a shorter lived subject to appropriation commitment obligation of the state of Alaska, that we at the point in time that we sold it would either get it rated or not, depending on market dynamics at the time. In the current market, it would have to be shorter because of the nature of the acquisition. So in this sense, in this instance, it would have a final maturity in 7 years, and we would expect an interest rate about 3.25% at this percent, or at this time, sorry. And so it would be more efficient than our master lease line of credit, which is really designed for smaller capital acquisitions that can otherwise fit in departments' operating budgets. And it's most recently been used by the university for vehicle acquisitions, 5-year amortization at a rate of 4%, just over 4% here within the last 2 weeks. So
maybe spin us up on why the committee should not just change that fund source and pay cash for it. The pros and cons. I mean, what's?
I don't know that there is necessarily any strict rule as far as how the committee should consider funding this. Obviously, cash is the easiest from everybody's perspective. It doesn't involve any work on our part to obtain it, other than shifting money that's currently invested towards this line item. The strategy that's been set forth by the governor's office is obviously a balance of funding some projects with sources other than cash, and in this instance, you will be able to access capital at a relatively low cost, tax exempt, and theoretically, although it hasn't played out that way in the last 6 months, you would be able to maintain your money in other funds where it would continue to be invested at a taxable rate, and so you could achieve a benefit through that relationship. But whether or not you should fund cash, that's a versus with debt, that's a policy decision on this particular item, and for the statewide accounting system as well, for that matter.
So, what would the ongoing budget impact be of this request?
I think
your estimation.
We indicated that it would be about $4 million, but we used a really conservative interest rate. Again, the market's been really volatile. So I plugged in a rate at 6% in the calculation for that. So you'd knock off about $600,000 a year if we sold those today.
Okay, so then by doing this debt financing, then we would just show a smaller draw on our general funds or other state funds at the end of the year.
You would. It's a way to levelize your capital budget expenditures rather than having a bump in any given year. It's that's as far as the master lease line of credit. That's the real benefit of that program, where a department has a $400,000 acquisition they need to make. They can otherwise fund $50,000 a year, and so they buy that through a lease purchase. They pay a low interest rate. They don't have to come to you and request an increment for a capital item, and they go on their merry way. In this instance, it does something akin to the same, in as much as you don't have to spend as much today, and you have the ability of leveraging future dollars to pay for acquisitions that are going to be available to the state and benefit the state for a much longer period of time than debt service in this instance.
And then we have spent some time here the last couple of years working on our financial structure to try to encourage better bond ratings and put the state in a position to retain those bond ratings. So by loading up on debt service, at what point are we going to need to start paying attention to our debt service impact on any potential bond rating that we may be faced with changes? Or is it an issue?
That's a legitimate issue to always be aware of. I think the state has a relatively low debt burden at this point in time compared to other states, but more importantly, compared to the state's resources and revenue streams, that since Alaska has a small population but relatively great wealth, primarily due to the production of oil in the state of Alaska, the matrices that, that folks might look at in other states, or the metrics don't apply in the state of Alaska. And so very generically, we typically use a percentage of unrestricted revenue as an allowed annual debt service amount to be in our comfort zone, and we've identified that as no more than 8% of unrestricted revenues should be obligated to debt service. And again, we're fairly conservative in a lot of the analysis we do, where we include programs that are subject to appropriation by the legislature, like the school debt reimbursement program, which obviously has underlying general obligation commitments of local communities, and the obligation of the state hasn't always been fully satisfied historically, but we still include it in that number. And with the revised revenue projections we have right now, and including bonds that have been issued, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough lease revenue bonds that were issued in December, as well as the general obligation bonds we're projecting to issue or sell April 2nd, close April 14th, we're well within that 8% threshold.
Okay. So we'll go on to the next item.
One other real quick note is that as we've been looking at other companies or optional tax programs, it looks like the initial purchase would be $20 million of that $24 million. And so it would reduce the general funds. If you chose general funds, it would reduce cash pretty immediate. The rest of the money is for customized programming. So, okay, so the second program is upgrading the Net App system. And that is it's basically all of our servers to all of the department's databases. And when we were looking at the NetApp system capacity that we have right now, I asked the IT manager to prepare kind of a brief history and what we're looking forward to. And I was fairly surprised, because right now we have about 7.5 terabytes of data that we're storing, and we've pretty well maxed out our system. Our projected growth through 2013, we're looking at 27 terabytes, and that's a pretty phenomenal amount of data. What we're looking at primarily, the biggest growth is our PFD, because of all the online filing. They're adding about 500 gigabytes of information per year. The tax division adds about 100 gigabytes per year, and Treasury adds about 100 only megabytes per year. So Treasury is probably our smallest. And then we haven't gotten all the information from child support on the additional information added there. But just the growth of the data needs in our department is requiring additional server space. Okay. And that's what that $418,000 is for. The third project is Child Support Services Computer Replacement Project, and it does say Phase 5. And there's about 230 employees that work for Child Support Services, and we are on a 5-year replacement cycle, so that all of their desktop PCs, servers, printers, fax machines, all of those pieces of equipment are on a 5-year rotation cycle for replacement, and that's what the $216,000 is for, is their fifth year of this replacement cycle. The fourth one is very similar. It's for the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, and same kind of thing. They also have a huge shredding machine that has to be replaced every so often, and their replacement, they're also in the fifth year of the 5-year replacement cycle, and that is $119,500. Project number 5 is the Permanent Fund Dividend Division Call Center Automated Routing. And what the Permanent Fund Dividend Division is hoping to do is create a 4-person, live person staffed call center. And those people would be able to access people's records immediately and at least be able to tell them in person the progress of their application or the status of their application. Right now, we do have an automated telephone system. It has been frustrating. It's been improving over time, but a lot of people don't want to get into a phone dialing system where you hit one to get one place and two to get another. They would rather have a live person responding. The SQL database evaluation was a request that was in the first round of the budget being submitted to the legislature. And we went back and looked at every old appropriation and found one that had not been fully expended. And in the supplemental budget that was just released today, we're asking for a title change on a $300,000 appropriation to take care of what that appropriation was originally for, plus take care of this SQL database project. So you'll see that it's been zeroed out.
On that old dusty document, how old was it?
I'm sorry, what?
The old dusty document, the old appropriation, how old was it?
Last year. Okay. It's only 1 year old.
Because DOT brought us one that was 1980 or 1983.
Oh, I think the Department of Revenue keeps track of their old dollars and spends them first. So I don't think we have anything quite that old. And then the next project is the Permanent Fund Corporation project. And Mike Burns is here to speak to that.
Okay, Mr. Burns, if you can come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have with us...
if you could introduce yourself, of course.
Mike Burns, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Let me just give a quick overview of this request. This is to secure an investment portfolio and accounting system and improved general ledger accounting. The current investment portfolio accounting system is over 12 years old and has limited ability to report on and account for the asset types we currently invest in. Key functions of this system would include reconciliation of assets with the custodian bank, monitoring performance, and dealing with a range of corporate actions such as dividends, pay downs, calls, etc. Just for a matter of scale, those corporate actions that we list there year to date are about $650 million. This funding will be spent for servers and other hardware, business analysis consulting, installation. If you have questions about the technical side of the system or how exactly we'd use it, Marshall Kinzorik is with me. Can answer your questions.
If we have any questions on it. Would, if you have time in your schedule, I see this is your last item up.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
If you could hang around till we work through Alaska Housing, and Co-Chair Hoffman and myself would like to have a minute of your time if we could.
Certainly.
Seeing as how you're in the building.
Thank you.
So that takes us to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Come on up. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be delighted to do that. My name is Dan Fowsky. I'm CEO of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. To my left is Brian Butcher, Director of Government Affairs. And to my right is Les Campbell, Budget Director for the Corporation. And per your comments last week, Mr. Chairman, I brought one less beard down here this time to try and do this presentation. We are here to present our capital budget. You have it before you, I believe. And this year, again, represents a substantial year for the company. The numbers before you represent what's basically 65% of our net income per the legislation that we operate under. 75% of adjusted net income. And with that, we've put together a series of projects, many of them existing programs, a few new ones in there, as we deal with different things that come before us. So with your permission, I'd like Les Campbell to start going through the projects in order that you have them.
Okay, that'll be fine. If you can introduce yourself.
My name is Les Gamble. I'm the budget director for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I put together a little book that you, I think everybody has, that gives the same information that you have from OMB, plus maybe a little bit more and some pictures and things like that. I won't go through everything in the book, but the first project we have on our list is the Housing Loans Program, or the Teacher Health Public Safety Housing. Reference number 37918. This is an ongoing program, $8 million of corporate dividend receipts. The purpose of the program is to provide gap funding to increase home ownership and rental units throughout the state. The program is designed to help retain desirable professionals in high-cost areas, and to date, 172 units have been developed under this program. The second project on the list is the Supplemental Housing Development Program, reference number...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Before we get away from... I'm sorry, I didn't... my apologies, Les. You said 172 units have been constructed thus far?
Correct.
And what's your annual objective?
For this funding, it would fund another 62 units out and mostly in the rural areas.
And what's your process for determining the location, what the priority is?
It would be based on the applications that we receive into the corporation. We'd let the public know that the money is available, and then the applications would come into us, and then it'd go through a process of priority, I guess, process.
Okay, so let me just take an example, because people have asked me about this, and I said I have no idea what the answer is, but let's say that I'm a teacher in Shungnak, Alaska, and I work with the community to get them to get housing in Shungnak. Does that come through, that come from Department of Ed, or does it come from Shungnak, or how does the system work?
Generally, it's the municipality or the school district that would apply for the funds on there. We wouldn't work directly with the school teacher itself, but the community, some entity in the community would develop the application, and we'd go through that way.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Senator, we like to work in a way. First, we don't do any direct dealing with contractors. We want to have government to government, if you will, like school district. School district can then partner with regional corp or a local corporation or local developer. We also want to make sure that there's community support in that, city councils and school boards and others have been involved in the process. Many times we'll get an application that is weak in certain regards as to financing or the type of building that they're going to build, and we will then work with them. They might miss that first year's funding, but we'll get them set up so that they get caught up into the next year. And one of the highlights of this program is that we gap finance that piece that doesn't work based on teacher salaries. The school foundation funding formula monies that come out that you folks appropriate comes out into the everywhere, and what we do is attach ourselves to a piece of that and then leverage it through a loan. In other words, a project in a Shugnack costs $1 million. I'm just going to throw a number, and it pencils at $700,000, meaning that based on what teachers make, based on what utilities, everything that we factor in, we know we have a $300,000 gap. So we then, once we've approved or feel that the project is viable, we'll write a check for that $300,000. Which then gets us down to $700,000, which then becomes a number that I have unlimited access to capital, or used to. I'm referring to Wall Street, but we then negotiate and work with the school district to, as they, we finance the piece that needs the gap. So now we're dealing with straight up money, where we then do a loan with the school district and or a private developer, which then has a contract with the school district. Now I know I'm getting long-winded, but they generally go through their school board, school district. We get inquiries all the time directly. We point them back that we've heard your concerns, and this is what we recommend, who you deal with. And then the applications come in when the notification goes out that the monies are available.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yeah, follow-up. Then the school district owns the house in Shungneck?
It can, or a private developer can own it and have a long-term lease with the school district. It's gone both ways.
Okay. And follow-up on that. Okay, so I lived there for 3 years. I move away. New teacher comes in. What do they do, and how do you determine what the cost is? I'm just trying to figure out the mechanism for what it costs the teacher to live there.
Through the chair, and I know that the rents are based on a certain percentage of their salary going towards the rental. Then that's I've certainly negotiated with the teachers and with the school board. And when we factor into that project, we calculate in what is a good fair market rent or what is affordable based on the salaries being paid and how much the rent should be. If you went to straight market rent, we think that we've taken that extra load out by the gap subsidy that we've supplied. So it wouldn't be very successful if we ended up at the end of the day with a sixplex that was beyond the scope of what teacher salaries would support in terms. So that's very carefully factored in before we agree to finance. We have to know that that's going to work.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, just one more, and forget about Shungneck for a second. But Les, you said that the objective, the goal was 62 units, $8 million. Is that because it's just the gap financing? Is that
right.
How you do that?
Yeah.
And with $8 million, you can do, you think, 62 or 58 or 64?
I think they've looked at the average of what we've done so far and say that this funding should develop 62. It could do a little bit more. It right. may do a little
yeah.
less.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Robbins, go ahead and continue.
The next project on the list is the Supplemental Housing Development Program, reference number 6323. It's a statewide project. For the funding request is $10 million of corporate dividend receipts. The purpose is to supplement the federal housing funds of the regional housing authorities so that they're able to ensure clean, safe, decent, affordable housing throughout Alaska. This is an ongoing program. It's been around for a while. It supplements up to 20% of what they get from the federal government, which they call NAHASDA funds. The monies that we supplement, those NAHASDA funds, cannot be used for administrative or other costs of the housing authority. It's got to go directly to the housing. And this supplemental housing money generally covers the infrastructure that the houses in a rural area, such as the water and sewer or the roads or the electrical systems to get up to the buildings. The third program on the list is weatherization program, reference number 6332, another statewide program. This request for this year, for 2010, is $2 million on federal receipts. And the purpose is to provide cost-effective energy improvements to homes of low-income people. This is to supplement the monies that were received last year. To receive the federal funds, we didn't put any corporate funds against this because we still have the money from last year. But we didn't want to lose the money or lose the federal funding as well.
Mr. Chairman,
you have a question?
Yeah, how come you're dropping the program down from $300 million?
We're using the $300 million, actually $360 million.
Maybe just give the committee a brief blurb on the $300 million and the quick status of that.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we were here, as you know, last week. The $300 million then became $360 million, and of that, $200 million is dedicated towards weatherization. I don't know if I have those figures in front of me. I can go a little bit off memory that I think about $30 million has been committed. Thank you, Brian. We have quick update.
No, that might not be the right one.
We've got it here. Yeah, this is
give us a summary. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Brian Butcher, Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
I believe for the weatherization program, we have approximately $30 million committed and on the street right now. The ramp up has been from the year before we received the $200 million, approximately 600 homes a year were weatherized. This last year, it's gone up to 1,800. We anticipate doubling that amount in this current summer season building year, and then we hope to double it again. In terms of the home energy rebate program, we have encumbered approximately $66 million for that program, and it's still running very strongly. Our wait list is in excess of 5,000 people. We feel comfortable that we're going to have the funds through fiscal year 10 to continue the program. The folks that signed, that were the first people to sign up right when the program began the beginning of last summer, will get to the end of the 18 months they have to do their work here at the end of calendar year 2009, beginning of 2010. And that's when we're really going to get an idea of what percentage of Alaskans that got the pre-rating are going to be taking advantage of the program. Because right now we know that approximately $6,000 is the average rebate. We know that $9,300 at this point is about what the average Alaskan puts into the program to get that average $6,000 rebate. So they do have some skin in the game, but we don't have an idea of what percentage at the end of the day are going to end up taking advantage of the program.
Okay, thank you.
Also, Mr. Chairman, this $2 million in front of you does not include any of the stimulus monies, which is, I know, stuff you folks are going to be dealing with going on down the road here.
Okay.
The next project, number four, Senior Citizen Housing Development Fund, reference number 6334, statewide program, $7,500,000 of corporate dividend receipts. And the purpose of this program is to provide funds for the development of senior citizens' housing. The program has funded to date about 1,100 units. This funding would project 90 more units and provide modifications for accessibility for additional 40 units. The monies could be used to purchase building sites, site preparation, building materials, construction, rehabilitation, or preparation of plans and specifications. The fifth project is a fire protection system, phase one, reference number 47066. Statewide program, the request is for $3,450,000 of corporate dividend receipts. And again, this is phase one. There'd be two phases and about the same amount. The purpose of this project is to flush and evaluate and make life safety code repairs to public housing fire protections throughout the state to reduce the maintenance cost, to make it more safe, and to increase the useful life of the structure. We previously had a capital budget that went out and looked at all the properties to evaluate all the properties, and this would take those recommendations and put them into play and make the renovations necessary to upgrade those systems.
Okay.
Number six is the security systems replacement upgrades, reference number 47068. Again, it's a statewide program. The request is for $750,000 of corporate dividend receipts, and the purpose is to upgrade existing security and door access system in senior and disabled and multifamily public housing complexes. Most of Anchorage has been done. This would be to get the rest of the state up to the same standard, to upgrade the systems, to make them more current, get out of the old systems that aren't supported anymore, and make replacement of the equipment easier. Number seven is the building system replacement program, reference number 47069. This is a new program. The request is for $2,500,000 of corporate dividend receipts. The purpose of this project is to address specific major repair and or replacement items identified in a five-year review. The The projects that will be addressed is a major roof replacement on Chugach View Senior Disabled Housing in Anchorage, replace the sidewalks and the retaining walls, the stairs and overhead walkways at Cedar Park here in Juneau, and paint the siding for Mountain View Senior Disabled Housing here in Juneau. Those are the projects. We do not specifically have a replacement reserve, which most major buildings and apartment structures would have, but this would be what that would use those monies for. Some major items that come up during the life cycle of the buildings. Okay. Number 8 is the HUD Federal Home Grant Program, reference number 6347. It's an ongoing program statewide. The request is for $3,300,000 of federal receipts with a corporate dividend match of $750,000. And the purpose of this program is to expand the supply of affordable low and moderate income housing and strengthen the ability of the state to design, implement strategies to achieve an adequate supply of safe, energy efficient, and affordable housing. This program has funded 44 rental projects containing 818 units and rehabilitated 373 low-income families. It has also assisted another 315 low-income households to purchase homes. Number 9 is the HUD Capital Fund Program, reference number 6342, statewide program for the public housing rental units. The request is for $3,200,000 of federal receipts, and the purpose of this program is to receive federal funds for the public housing program to renovate and modernize public housing units that HFC owns throughout the state. Number 10 is the federal and other competitive grants, reference number 6348, ongoing program statewide. The request is for $1,500,000 of corporate receipts for match purposes and $3 million of federal receipts. And the purpose of this program is to allow AHFC to apply when the opportunity comes from HUD or other agencies or even private agencies that target housing needs and support services of low-income and special needs groups, such as senior citizens, the mentally and physically or developmentally disabled, or the homeless. We will also apply for energy-related grants as it relates to housing, and when it's required, AHFC will use the corporate receipts to match those funds. Some of the programs that we've applied for and have in-house are the HUD Supportive Housing, Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS, or the HOPA program, the USDA Housing Preservation Grant Program, Grant Match Program, and HUD Technical Assistance Program. Number 11 is the Competitive Grants for Public Housing, reference number 6350, statewide program. The request is for $750,000 in corporate receipt authority with a match of $250,000 of corporate dividend receipts. And this program is similar to the last program, only this one is tied to the public housing residents, the tenants that are in our public housing units. When funds become available and we can apply for them. Some of the programs that we've used this money for is the drug elimination program, the family self-sufficiency program, and using coordinators and caseworkers, senior services coordinator, and resident opportunities and supportive services, the ROS grants, and so on. Number 12 is the energy efficiency monitoring research, reference number 6351, statewide program. The request this year is for $2 million of corporate dividend receipts, and the purposes of this project is to provide a designated grant to Cold Climate Housing Research Center to conduct housing construction research, analysis, and information dissemination among the housing industry and the public. It has data gathering and analysis, being continually related to energy efficiency technologies for homes constructed in northern building and market conditions.
If we could stop there for a minute, I see that in 07 it was, well, 500 for several years, and then I went to a million for 2 years, and now it's 2 million. And I don't doubt that it's a good program, but I don't have that total in front of me, but I think you guys spent all your money in your proposed projects here. That doesn't leave us any room. I'm just kind of curious, how come you didn't leave your friendly fellows at the finance table a little flexibility?
It's a very difficult question, Mr. Chairman. The way we put this budget in was that depending on what state revenues were and resources, we wanted to list out those things that we want to continue doing and what the costs of them are. And granted, we just normally anticipate that through the course of the legislative session, what the needs of the state are, where the debate goes, that there will, we just assume that there's going to be changes. And so we didn't leave this year a designated amount as far as on expended. You are correct in that assessment.
And then these are in priority order, I assume.
Yes, that is correct, Mr. Chairman. Also, we talked to your staff about this particular project, and we will be getting you more detail on what new projects and what the need for this increased request is for.
Okay, thank you.
Number 13 is the State Energy Program SEP Special Projects, reference number 32526, statewide program. This year's request is $150,000 of federal receipt authority with a $50,000 corporate dividend receipt match. The purpose of the program is to allow the state to apply and participate in special projects that are funded by the Department of Energy that promote energy related technologies and research. This gives us authority to be able to use those funds when they become available. Number 14 is the statewide project improvements, reference number 40068. These are statewide program. The request is for $3 million of corporate dividend receipts, and the purpose of this project is to provide funding to address known and unknown conditions through HFC's housing stock. We have units that are scattered throughout the state. We have a list that of what they call the physical needs assessment list that go over millions and millions of dollars. And I've got a copy of that physical needs assessment list, and not all the projects on that list have funding estimates on it, and it totals about $13 million, even though that some of them aren't don't have the estimates in place yet. So over a period of time, we think about $3 million a year for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years for this request to address these items. Number 15 is the LUSAC Manor Redevelopment Phase 3, reference number 43076. It's a renewal and replacement project in downtown Anchorage. The request is for $8,492,400 of corporate dividend receipts. This request is to complete the project. This is phase three. We've had two other phases on here. We've looked at the issue. We've looked at the estimates in the project, and the replacement costs are $15.1 million in a 2007 estimate. To renovate the property, it would be about $13 million. So we feel it's probably better to go ahead and replace all the existing units. There's 62 units that are in the project. They're 45 years old, and they're on an 8 acre site that's in Midtown, in Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, this is unique in another way, and that is a HFC's venturing out into the area of more leveraging. What ends up happening here is, because of its location, it's a valuable piece of property, and we want to make maximum use of it. So the 8.492 million is going to leverage between, we estimate, 28 and 32 million, because we will also use tax credits. We will end up under one scenario that we've looked at it with a 120 unit development project. We would like to move our family investment center down to this location at some point. It's on a hub where the bus service goes. And the other thing that we're trying to do is not only increase the amount of public housing units we have, but to bring in some affordable housing units to help with some of the problems in the Anchorage area, particularly where people that actually work downtown can afford to live downtown. That is a very tight commodity. And so we felt in leveraging, at the end of the day, this will be owned by another entity and through the course of the 30-year involvement. So at the end of the day, HFC doesn't end up owning this. We end up saving some money on the maintenance costs, removing some of the liability of that structure. And this is kind of the way things are starting to go in other areas across the country, when into high-cost areas to try and bring both low but also affordable housing mix into valuable pieces of property that sit in this section, this particular case, Midtown, Anchorage, at that intersection of CNA as they go down that hill right by the Sullivan Arena. And so it's trying to maximize the use of that property and to increase the number of units and to leverage money and to quit, in my estimation, throwing good money after bad by continuing to fix these units up that were constructed over 40 years ago, and certainly not to Alaska conditions, as we saw a lot of construction going on in those days.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So at the end, this would be a low-income project that is publicly owned, but eventually it would be privatized?
Correct. It would be low and moderate, and with tax credits, we have some more leeway as to the rent structure that could go in.
And at the end of the project, would this, I assume the state owns that property, would the state still own that lucrative 8 acres of property?
Correct, but it would also maintain its right as to who the tenants would be, so that there would be no discernible or diminishment of affordable housing units and public housing units.
And what is the category of your low to medium income? What are the rates? Who would be eligible under low to medium income?
Families at 80% of AMI, area median income on the public housing side, and under 40 on the tax credit unit side, serving families below 60%. I know that we have online, and I hope they're there, Jim Girk, Director of Public Housing, and also Mark Romig, Director of Planning. Are you, Mr. Chairman, if I may, are you fellows online?
We have Mr. Mark Romick, if you could please identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then help Senator Hoffman with the question.
Sure. My name is Mark Romick. I'm the director of the Planning Department for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And the answer to the question is, in Anchorage, the median income is for a family of four is $77,000. At 80% of it of the median, it's about $58,000. And at 60% of the median, it's roughly about $40,000 a year for a family of four.
And the question that I guess that I have is, are we assisting in funding for any other medium income houses, and what does the private enterprise say about us getting involved in medium income housing?
This is Mark Romick. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, are you asking me or are you asking Dan in Juno there.
Whoever may.
Mark, go ahead, if I may, and then I will add to it.
Okay. Well, we, Senator Hoffman, the population of people at 80% of the median and below is generally the population that the corporation normally participates with. It's possible under this under the scenario that Dan has explained, there could be some people above 80% of the median that live there once the final configuration of the property is done. We don't anticipate that it's going to be a significant amount, so we don't anticipate there be a significant competitive factor with the existing private sector. One of the attributes of this project that Dan referred to is that eventually the project or the project will be owned by a private owner that owns and that operates the project. So we will be working with the private sector in developing this project very closely, and it won't be a total public project that would in any way compete with the private sector.
And the other question, I guess, is will the same income requirements stay the same for the low-income individuals once it's finally owned by the private enterprise?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I can speak for the tax credit side of it, and I'll let Jim Girk, the Director of Public Housing, speak for the public housing side. But the short answer is yes. The terms of participating in the low-income housing tax credit program are that the rent restrictions and the income restrictions are in place for anywhere from 15 to 30 years.
This is Jim Girk with the Public Housing Division of Alaska Housing Finance. The answer is essentially the same for the public housing side. There'd be a covenant that would require that the number of units that were designated as public housing would remain for the life of the project for that purpose. AHFC would still have a fiduciary responsibility back to HUD to make those assurances. And on a different point that was made earlier by Mark, we would have a land lease with the developer, so AHFC would retain ownership of the land. The developer would retain ownership of the improvements from the ground up.
And the final question, Mr. Chairman, is this concept being considered for other parts of the state?
Go ahead, Dan.
Jim, did you want to comment on it? Go ahead.
Sure. Actually, at this point, we're delving into something that's a fairly common practice in the lower 48 right now. It could be our flagship development here in Anchorage, if developed as described this afternoon. But no, this is the only concept that we have currently in the works, although we're anxious to see what its success will be so that we might apply it elsewhere, because it is a common practice in the lower 48 to do what's called mixed finance development, public and private funding, leveraging one another to build more affordable units than we might otherwise if we just went back to the legislature year after year for in our capital budget.
Mr. Chair, if I,
go ahead and quick follow-up, then we have a question from Senator.
If I to follow up to for Jim and then to Senator Hoffman, it is our goal to make this work, and it will work, and to apply this to all areas of the state, because this is really a pretty unique way to deal with affordable housing. In reference to competition, competition on the housing side generally comes from the market rent side, and we try to, that's a whole different ball game, if you will. These affordable units are very, very difficult to develop based on when you look at the income levels and what construction costs are. And I think it's a pretty unique approach to it, and I think it's going to show a great deal of promise statewide, because it's just becoming so difficult to, there's been no production of units in any noticeable numbers for years. HUD got out of that business, and every area of the state we keep hearing the same on the affordable housing side. And so that's what this does. And so our goal is to make this work well and to apply it everywhere that we operate.
Thank you. I was concerned that if this isn't something that's across the state, it may be so affordable that we see more people from rural Alaska moving out for these affordable houses in urban Alaska.
I understand your concern, Senator.
Senator Olson, do you have another question?
Actually, I don't at this time.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me approximately how many square feet there are of combined space, residential as well as the outbuildings, or at least the childcare and community building and maintenance shop, just a general close number?
Senator, if I may, can I defer? Jim, are you still online?
Yes, I am. But that might be, hold on. We have a document here. We're going to check to see if we might be able to quote a number.
All I have in front of me is just 120 units. I don't have a square footage layout. It'll be three stories, walk up. We're trying to avoid elevator buildings. They don't work very well on the public housing side, we've learned. There are going to be one, two, and three bed. I think there'll be no five bedroom, if I'm correct.
That is correct. Dan, this is Jim, and I'm estimating among the livable space in the configuration now, there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50,000 to 60,000 square feet. I don't have that, and I apologize, that particular number in front of me. There's a mixture of 2, 3, 4, and 5 bedroom units at this complex, so of course they will vary in size based on that. And we don't have the square footage in front of us for our family investment center at the moment, although if memory serves me, it seems like it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of about 8,000 square feet.
Well, possibly you could just get that to me or us. I'm not sure if others are interested. And I'm surprised that you're able to get around the elevator requirement on public housing, public buildings. But anyhow.
Jim, can you explain that better than I did?
Yes. Actually, the property is a fairly decent size. We know for a fact that we could develop 120 units on the site without having to go to the municipality for rezoning. We have had preliminary drawings from an architect already, Dean Architecture, showing a configuration of something like 8 plexes that are walk-up style units that would run around the perimeter of the property. There is a likelihood of having one elevator building if we were to build one-bedroom apartments. In order to make that pencil out, we'd have to have about 30 apartments in that building in order to afford the common areas and the elevator. Preliminarily, we're looking at the possibility of putting those units above our family investment center, so that we could get away with just one elevator building on the
Thank you.
Those would be, if I may, Senator, 31 bedroom units, because on our list there's a great request, a great deal of interest and desire for one bedroom units. The current Family Investment Center, for those of you familiar, resides out on International Airport Road and Arctic in Midtown, heading towards the south side of Anchorage. It's an old building that we've had for many years and ended up taking ownership of it, I think, from HUD. And it's in need of repair. It also, this location represents a much more local or centralized location for people that are clients in that that base on the bus system, and to get to and fro, and to meet with their counselors, and to deal with the paying of their rent and applying and everything else. It would be a much more efficient way to operate.
Dan, if I may, this is Jim, and we did find the numbers on the square foot in answer to that question. Under the scenario, this would be the new development, right? Under the scenario of 120 apartments on that site, there'd be slightly more than 119,000 square feet of living area. And I was correct, the community center is about 8,000 square feet.
Thank you. The next project?
The next project, number 16, is a Denali Commission project, reference number 41531, statewide program. The request is for $5 million in federal receipts. And the purpose is to administer the Denali Commission's housing programs, which go primarily to rural Alaska. There are two programs that they have. They have their own teacher housing program and an elder supportive housing program. It's less funding that we've had in the past, but we feel that this would be enough money to support what Denali Commission wants us to do this year. The next project, number 17, is statewide energy improvements, reference number 45388. This is for a statewide program. Request is for $5 million of corporate receipts. And the project purpose of the project is to implement some of the energy efficiency findings developed during the energy audit process throughout our units throughout the state. We have become the weatherization and the energy rebate people, and we do renovate or we do weatherization throughout the state, but we don't have the funds when we don't use those funds to renovate our own properties. And what we'd like to do is bring our properties up to the same standards as we're doing elsewhere. That would be what this money would be for. The next project, number 18, is the statewide ADA improvements, reference number 45389. It's $500,000 of corporate dividend receipts, and ADA is the
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah. We've entered into a voluntary compliance agreement with HUD. They've identified through an audit of things that need to be upgraded, and we've agreed to work on those things, and this $500,000 will go with the prior year, and it probably won't be enough, and we'll probably be in next year for an additional $500,000. So it's an ongoing project. Number 19, Birch Park 2, B Building Reconstruction, reference number 47070. This is to rebuild the fourplex structure in Fairbanks that has been destroyed by fire a few years back. The request was originally for $800,000 in corporate receipts and $640,000 of federal receipts. We have an amendment into OMB to reduce the corporate dividend receipts down to zero, but keep the federal receipts at 640. In replacing the corporate receipts in this case, we have stimulus money that has been made available. This is a shovel-ready project, and we move that project into this stimulus. So we would drop the $800,000 of corporate receipts. The next project is the Homeless Assistance Program in the Mental Health Bill, reference number 45390. It is a statewide program. The request for 2010 is $6 million in corporate dividend receipts, $500,000 in mental health trust authority receipts, $500,000 in general funds mental health, $1 million of statutory designated funding, $2 million of federal receipts. And the purpose is to support programs that address homelessness, providing assistance to families in imminent danger of becoming homeless or those who are currently homeless. Last year, we had a budget request to start up a housing trust fund of about $10 million. And instead of creating the trust, the programs or the projects that were involved with that trust were put into this project and increased in amount. So the amount of money is consistent with what was provided for last year, and the programs would be similar to those that were shown last year. In the meantime, the corporation and other partners have developed a 10-year plan for this homeless prevention. It's called the 10-year plan to end long-term homelessness in Alaska. It is currently being reviewed, and it will be posted on the internet soon. and it goes through a 10-year process of what this funding would be used for and ongoing for the next 10 years. Shows the sources of funds and the use of those funds as well.
Mr. Chairman, this is Allison Cohen in concert with the Governor's Homeless Council, Coalition on the Homeless, that I do chair. This is a result of debate that's gone on for the last couple of years when there was an initial request before many of you to create a $100 million endowment for a trust. The result of those discussions was to get the situation here where, with the ongoing resources that we have, some additional capital coming in, the stated goals, and the coalition is going to be, the council, excuse me, is going to be meeting here soon to approve the 10-year plan. But the plan, you know, just in brief, recommends that 1,000 new units be created over the next 10 years, 500 new rental assistance vouchers, 160 new supportive service slots, and $3 million annually to establish a coordinated pool of funds for prevention of activities. We're quite satisfied with how this is going, and I hope we can continue to fund it because it is making a big difference. I worry that these numbers, and they are, there's been some reduction, but I do worry in light of the economy and other things going on that this number always seems to kick off, and we're just trying to stay ahead of it, and I think we're making some real strides across the state, and I want to compliment the providers and the various agencies that we work with and concerned citizens and others, that Mental Health Trust folks, Rasmussen, and other groups that are involved. It's just really quite an effort. But I've learned a great deal, that things that I didn't know in working in this process. It's really something that goes on up. I think we're done.
Two more. The next project in the mental health bill is beneficiary and special needs housing. Reference number 6360. This is a statewide program. The request is for $1,750,000 of corporate dividend receipts. This is the same amount that has been requested for the last several years. The purpose is to provide funds for Alaskan nonprofit service providers and housing developers to increase housing opportunities to Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries and other special needs populations throughout Alaska. The program has developed 118 units since FY 2000. In FY 2008, 18 units were funded for persons with severe mental illness and developmental disabilities. And this funding would provide another 16 congregate housing for people with mental illness or developmental disabilities. It's an ongoing program. The next project that we have in the book is home modification program. This is actually a Department of Health and Social Service project, so we have corporate funding in it, but we'll let them talk about that. So we'll go on to the last project, number four, or number three in the green page. The Emergency Assistant Grants for Mental Health Trust Beneficiaries, the reference number 43318. Statewide program, the request is for $200,000 in Mental Health Trust Authority receipts, and the purpose of the program is to support beneficiaries in maintaining home ownership or long-term rental stability, providing gap or short-term assistance. Originally, this was done by Department of Health and Social Services, and we've been doing it for the last 3 or 4 years, and this, I think, is the second year. This would be the third year that it's been officially in Alaska Housing Finance. Those are the projects that we have in the budget for this year. If we have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Any questions on AHFC's capital budget request? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fourplex in Fairbanks, that sounds like a lot of money for a fourplex. $1.4 million.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address it, if you will, Senator. It is a lot. In fact, it's so much that the first time it came across my desk, I said, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
And we then went back Had the bids analyzed and put it back out again, had some experts look at it and said that the numbers were reasonable. I am still concerned. One of the things, it's still an expensive undertaking. If we can get it zeroed out on the corporate side and get stimulus, that's fine. It's still costing a lot to build a fourplex that we own the land and the pad is on. And I trust the people that have looked at it. I had made a comment in one meeting, it'd be cheaper for me to go out and buy four houses than to build this fourplex. However, I do have Mr. Girk on the other end, and we've had some fairly lengthy debates on this very issue. So, Jim, are you still there?
He's gone now.
I don't think Jim... anyway,
When was the last bid?
I know it's gone out to bid a couple of times, and the amount was so high that we just said we're not going to do that right now. We didn't have the federal receipts that we're talking about here are the insurance proceeds, and the insurance proceeds were not sufficient to be able to rebuild those units. So we stopped that, and we decided to put it in the capital budget as a capital project so that we could be able to fund that project. So I don't think it was last summer, but I think it was the summer before was the last time that we bid that.
I'd bid it again. Thank you, though.
Oh. It would be.
If there's, as always, any questions, I know we will always work with staff, and we appreciate the opportunity to come before you with this capital budget.
Okay. Hopefully next year we'll have a little bit of room with money.
We did free up some money for you.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Our pleasure.
We have one last item. If you can go ahead and reintroduce yourself for the record, just make it easy for the tape. And then go ahead and present the last item, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell, Admin Services Director for the Department of Revenue. And the last project in our department is a request for the Alaska Gas Spur Line. It's an $8 million request, and this would go to ANGDA, which is the Natural Gas Development Authority. And over the last year, the original request was about $5 million, and that $5 million number had been discussed over the last year, basically looking at how to advance an in-state gas line, and it was looking at design, permitting, and just some of the logistics of getting a gas line established. And what they determined is that $10 million is truly the amount that looks like it would be needed. There is $2 million available through a different appropriation in a different agency that could be used toward this, and this $8 million would help pay for basically developing an in-state gas line. I spoke with Harold Hines, who's the executive director of ANGDA, and on March 9th, the ANGDA board and Harry Noah, who is now one of the new in-state gas line individuals, met to start to establish a plan to get in-state gas line going. And they are currently working on a detailed work scope for this project. Tomorrow, Harry Noah and Harold Hines are meeting to kind of define some of those specifics on how to get the in-state gas line going. And Harold said that they thought they would be able to get you a detailed work plan by Monday. And it would describe how the $10 million would be used, which is the $8 million request here and the $2 million from a different appropriation.
Okay. And then earlier in the testimony from the department that these are ranked in priority order with Alaska Housing using virtually all their funds. Why would this $8 million request then be last?
It's priority order, but it's also alphabetical. And the corporations and authorities I guess, fall underneath the Department of Revenue. And so you saw the agency requests first. AHFC just happens to fall, I guess housing comes before natural. So that's why this particular request is alphabetically at the bottom of the list. It's certainly a high priority for the governor.
Senator Thomas and Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what is the route? Or you know, or we have to wait for them? Is it the one proposed by ANGDA before from over to Glen Allen and up to Delta, or is it something different?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the route is part of the details that they're looking at. There is another bill that's been introduced about a week and a half ago now that does expand the scope of ANGDA to look at Western Slope and Brooks Range possibilities as well. But I believe that this particular route is North Slope Gas to South Central Alaska, and I don't know the very specifics of the route.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm a little concerned that we're putting additional money on the table before we have the concept. And before we have the concept and the route, how we determine how much money we need. So I guess my question at this point in time is, if this money is allocated, where does it go?
Senator Huggins, through the chair. Right now, the $8 million would go to ANGDA. And they are figuring out the detailed work plan tomorrow. And so you'll know exactly how that money is going to be spent. And ANGDA is kind of a compilation of Harold Hines and Harry Noah and all of the gas line individuals, DNR, Department of Revenue. It's a large group.
Senator, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess to further that, as I recall, the Commissioner of Department of Revenue has written a letter to ANGDA saying cease on spending for some reviews, and I haven't seen a copy of the letter, but yet we're sending money to ANGDA. I mean, what we're doing is not congruent.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I actually haven't seen that letter either. I know that the department is reviewing all of their appropriations to make sure that they fit within their scope of work, and that is part of the reason why we're expanding their scope of work in a separate piece of legislation. But to my knowledge, most of that is a technical review to make sure that we have all the correct appendices, and it's strictly more of an appropriation type review.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and just one additional follow-up. I'm just looking at techniques to get the money to get in-state gas, because I mean, I think most people around this table understand the criticality of in-state gas. If you're Fairbanks, you super understand it. There are two other bills, as you mentioned, and they will have fiscal notes. My assumption that those bills can be in lieu of this $8 million, but help me out if I'm wrong.
Senator Huggins, there are three pieces of legislation. One of them is expanding the scope of ANGDA, and it is a zero fiscal note. It's strictly making it clear that they can review gas line projects statewide. The in-state gas line bill does have a fiscal note. I am not intimately familiar with that particular piece of legislation. And I think the other bill you might be referring to is the REGA bill, the interstate transmission piece. That one also has a different fiscal note. Those two are, the in-state gas line might be very similar to this $8 million project. But I think there's just some separations there as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is in regards to the viability of the gas line if the spur line is built. And I was wondering if the $10 million will try to answer this question.
Your question is the likelihood of it being built?
It's been brought up in other committees that if we build a spur line for in-state use, that may jeopardize the economic viability of the gas line to the lower 48. And I was wondering if this $10 million will address that question.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I can't answer that. I really don't know. But I can ask that Harold and Harry include that in their detailed description that would be provided on Monday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson, do you have a question?
No, I don't. Mr. Chairman, thanks for asking.
Do we have any other questions for the department? Okay, well, that concludes capital requests. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we'll start it with the Department of Administration, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and then finish up with Department of Public Safety. And as we continue on, as you're probably seeing, that the list gets shorter, we did the heavier or the larger departments first. So things will speed up a little bit tomorrow as far as the number of departments. With that, we'll see everybody back at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Meeting adjourned.